Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Swap Me Podcast. My name's Daniel Hannan.
My name is Niall McCann.
And it feels like ages since we've done this. Why does it feel so long?
It was ages, was it? When did we do the last one?
I can't remember. When did we do the last episode? Well, it came out last Sunday, but I think it was done the previous week. Saturday or something like
that. Oh, okay. Yeah, so it is ages.
Yeah,
then.
It feels long enough to be like, oh, how does this work again?
Yeah. Okay, you know, but it's grand. That just means we have loads to say.
If it sounds a little bit different, it's because I am trying out some new microphone techniques that Niall has assured me no one gives two fucks about except me. But I'm the one with my head, so I'm just going to have to do it.
That is true. And much good may it bring you. Much luck may it bring you, Dan.
You should. The amount of obsession that goes into how this thing sounds, and it always sounds pretty much the same.
Well, you're not consistent, Dan.
Well, that's true.
Hmm.
So
that was strange, no?
Well, not especially, no. Everything's kind of the same. I had some big news that I told you about just before we started that I don't really want to talk about it on the podcast just yet. When it becomes a little bit more of a reality, I might get into it.
All right, good stuff.
But there's like two people that know about that and you're one of them, so I don't want to broadcast it to the world just yet.
Fair play.
That sounds like something that it isn't. It sounds like it's pregnancy, which it isn't.
Nobody's pregnant.
Nobody's
Danny
pregnant.
Is not pregnant.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, fair play. Though, fair play.
Cool.
Enough said. Yeah, all right.
As Stan Lee would say.
As Stan Lee himself would say, yes.
If he wasn't being smothered by a pillow by a nurse or whatever the fuck's happening, that poor man.
Yeah. But he's an elderly man. Like.
Yeah, he is, but... Do you know what I was... Like, I was listening to us talking about that on the podcast there... when I listened to it recently, and I was just thinking, surely, like, if it's that out in the open and it's in the press, it can't still be happening, surely.
Oh, no, you would hope not, no.
Yeah, I mean, once it's like, if that was one of your relations and it was common knowledge that was happening, even in town, it wouldn't be long being put a stop to, like, you know. The fact that it's Stan Lee makes it a bit weird that it's still going on.
Yeah, what right do I have to intervene in the life of Stan the man Lee, Danny? It is an uncomfortable situation.
I spoiled Avengers for a guy at work.
Oh, what did you say?
Well, I did it on purpose because he was singing the theme tune for Bosco. Someone had been talking about Bosco.
Yeah.
Someone had been discussing Bosco and he started singing that theme tune. And I had heard him talking about how he was going to see Avengers earlier in the day. And I saw him do that thing. He was like, no, don't spoil it. And I was like, when he started doing that, and he kind of kept doing it, and I said, man, if you don't stop doing that, I'm going to spoil Avengers for you. I don't care. It won't cost me a second thought to do it. And he was like, yeah, and he kept doing it. And then later on in the day, he started singing the theme tune for Dawson's Creek.
I don't want to wait for my life to be over.
That one. And I said, dude, that counts also. Either please stop doing that or I'm going to spoil the fuck out of this film for you. And spoilers, Frank, just in case anyone's listening.
Yeah, spoilers, Frank.
Fast forward about 30 seconds. And he kept doing it. And I just turned around to him and I said, Spider-Man dies.
What'd he say?
He just was like, I can't believe you just did. And I was like, yeah, we had a deal. I asked you. You're really starting to annoy me now with this Bosco and this Dawson's Creek. So I just turned around and I just went, Spider-Man dies.
Ah, he doesn't really.
Yeah, but that's what I said as well. I was like, I have it on good authority that he doesn't really die. Which is also a spoiler for the second one.
Yeah. I hate
so
that.
So it's a double whammy.
I hate the way you can't go on places. There's places on the internet where you can't voice an opinion without people going, spoilers! It's like, what inside knowledge do you think I have? I'm speculating here, like you.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, spoiler, putting a spoiler on it. It's like... Do you have like some vice, some mental brain vice that prevents your brain from speculating about these things? How is my speculations any more spoiler than your fucking speculations?
You didn't put them on the internet.
Nobody cares whether you put them on the internet. You're just another asshole.
Yeah, I mean, like... I don't know, like, particularly with these films, what are you spoiling? Everybody lives happily ever after. Fuck off.
It'll be fine. It'll be fine, Ducky.
Oh, turning into such a grouch.
Babs Windsor has Alzheimer's.
I saw that, yeah. She's really not well. They had a picture. I hadn't seen a picture of her in a few years now, to be fair. But even in the photograph, you were like, oh, the woman doesn't look well.
Oh, really? Is she frail?
Yeah, she looks pretty frail in it, yeah.
Oh, poor Babs. Well, she, how old is that woman now?
Oh, I don't know. She's been her... She must be 80.
Oh, yeah, comfortably, sure.
She'd be over that.
Is she the singer, 60s, she had to be in her 20s.
The singer from Frightened Rabbit apparently killed himself. They were like...
What's Frightened Rabbit?
They're like... I'm going to say this and people are going to probably complain. I always thought they sounded like Snow Patrol, but like a good Snow Patrol. A Snow Patrol that wasn't shite.
Right,
I hate that song.
Why do you hate that song?
I don't know.
It's I quite like it.
I'll be right beside you, dear. It's one dear. Syllable in that fucking word.
Dear.
Yeah.
Dear.
Or do you know the one
I always, the road down.
I know, yeah. The one I always hated was, if I lay here, if I just lay here. I hate that song.
And it's you can hear the twang, though.
Yeah, no, you can. And
is it just that like they can't do an American accent, or are they deliberately saying,
hey, you're from the north?
Maybe that's, and that's commendable. You know, fair fucks to them, like, you know, but... Once that album Final Straw had some good stuff on it, and then after that it was like they were like this really like they were like Aslan or something all of a sudden, like, you know.
Is that not a good thing?
No.
Why is that not a good thing?
Like anthems from people who are hollow.
What?
I don't get it. Well, actually, no, Gary Lightbody sounds cool, to be fair to him.
Why, what's his, is that his name?
Gary Lightbody is
Gary Lightbody?
That's your man from Snow Patrol, yeah.
Fucking hell.
The hook-nosed fellow from Snow Patrol.
I couldn't pick any of the Snow Patrol guys out of a lineup.
Well, I couldn't pick the others, but I'd recognise him, all right. He's a sound head, and he's obviously a music head as well. When you hear him being interviewed, he's obviously like a fan, you know, which kind
of
makes
him...
I'm
a fan of music.
He kind of sounds like that.
Well, that's how he sounds in his songs, so it doesn't surprise me.
But yeah, this is the lead singer, I right now I forget his name, from Frightened Rabbit, passed away.
Is it Jim? Passed away, shut up.
Well, he committed suicide, he's only 36, like, you know. And he was like, to me they always sounded a little bit like Snow Patrol, but a Snow Patrol that you could kind of relate to a little bit more with better lyrics. And
okay.
They were Scottish, but yeah, he was missing and then he was found, unfortunately, like, you know, so. And they were a band I listened to a little bit a few years ago, didn't. Like some bands, you ever get that maybe with other things, with films or whatever? Some bands you kind of fall in love with for a little while and they just kind of fall out of the rotation a little bit. I find with streaming that easily happens because you don't have the CD on your shelf. And if you stream something for a while, and then for me, I know for ages there, I was just bouncing around streaming services to whichever one was free for 3 months and using different email addresses and all that. Like, you know, so the playlists and stuff that you make just disappear, like, you know.
Streaming bandit strikes again.
Who was that man?
That masked streamer. He came in and he listened to our music and then it just left without a bio leave.
Is that what the head of Google Music sounds like?
That's exactly what he sounds like.
Headed on his chairs, I believe. Yes. Nothing left but his characteristic calling card of a fake email address and one of those little domino masks or whatever.
Anyway, but
so
it's a thing, yeah, where like things that I was like obsessed with for a few months in like 2012. I don't remember what they are, like, you know.
Yeah, I find the kind of the daily mixes on Spotify are, I don't listen to them that much, to be honest, but they have like songs you listen to when you're on.
See, that's why I don't like my daily mix. I don't like the picture it paints of me.
Why?
What, because it's always like Bob Dylan, Neil Young, Tom Petty. It's always just like, oh, I just like old white dudes. That's it.
You do like old white dudes.
Do you know
dudes.
What I have noticed, though?
What?
That they're racist, those daily mixes.
Why?
Because I've noticed that outside of old white dudes, I listen to a lot of like funk and reggae, and I've noticed that my daily mix segregates them. All the black artists will be in one playlist and all the old white dudes will be in one. And then where I listen to like Amy Mann and Wild Flag and Slater Kinney, they're on their old, in the vagina playlist. So Spotify supports segregation.
The vagina playlist. It's like going to see the vagina monologues and the night you go, it's being read by Brian Dennehy.
He's great, but he's not why you went to see the vagina monologues.
That is weird. I remember being in HMV in Newry. Remember when there were music shops? Is that still there?
There is Classified Records in this town of ours.
Ah, for posers.
Well, yeah.
Vinyl-y posers.
What's not for posers now? Like, you know,
yeah,
you're all posing at the cinema at these Marvel films.
I'm not. I sit there that's quite quietly. Yeah, maybe.
Sorry.
No, it's a fair point. But in HMV, I remember going up and was kind of looking just randomly through some stuff, and there was an urban section, and it had the people you would expect, all the hip hop artists and the the various sort of
this 90s is an urban
NWA things. Oh, certainly.
No one did see at the front door of this house.
Tomac.
Urban desolation.
Urban Decay.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, and in the middle of them all was sitting Tracy Chapman.
And in the urban section.
I was like, oh, I get it.
Oh my god.
Urban, that's in inverted commas.
She should be... Her CD should be beside the Gordon Lightfoot albums.
Yes, beside fucking Ron Sexsmith or somebody. That's not... It's not, she's no more fucking urban than I am.
You had a fast car. Great song, right? That sounded like I was taking the piss. She's a great song.
I really like Tracy Chapman.
Her drummer ended up joining the Eels as their drummer.
Really?
Yeah. He's not with them now, but for a few years, their drummer was former of Tracy Chapman. Or possibly he was Tracy Chapman, former of Eels. I forget which way around it happened. But well, I think he played with Tracy Chapman before he played with the Eels.
I would hang out with Tracy Chapman. If I was a drummer, I would be like, yeah, I'll go... You know, play around with Tracy Chapman for a while. She's pretty cool, isn't she?
Yeah, she seems groovy. Yeah, she.
I like her.
Yeah, and she's great voice, like real signature voice. You know.
Yeah, she's very distinctive, isn't she?
Talking about a revolution.
Yeah. Yeah, I like her, but you know where she should not fucking be is in the fucking urban section of HMV. I propose they just come out clean and rename it their Negro section.
Do you know what? I was talking with Kat the other day.
Ridiculous.
I was talking about work, and I was talking about how fair things are now because they're sort of automated, and
going to be a big one. But coming the thing down is, the track.
Well, the thing is, like, I was sort of defending it a little bit. I was saying, like, because things are automated now, it kind of doesn't matter who you are because everything's just done automatically and fairly. And she was going, yeah, but they're automated by white people.
Yeah, that is true.
And it's just something I had not thought about before. And then it stands to reason then that segregationist Spotify just have my playlist divided neatly into colors and genders.
No, it's more important than that. A lot of sort of legal procedures and stuff are kind of automated now as well. I remember Sean McCreef did a thing about that a couple of years ago now. But... It is sort of interesting because that's going to bite us all in the ass. It's
everything we enjoy is going to bite us in the ass. Not that we enjoy automation, but you know what I mean.
But automation is it's a peculiar one. It's hard to see it, man. It's hard to see how you're going to make that, how you're going to square that circle. If every job only has to be done once, and once it's done once, it can be done better by a machine. What do you do with the people? Like,
yeah, I mean, wow, this took a dark turn really quickly, didn't it?
Because I have a friend who's used to saying, I mean, there's horses. Nobody uses horses anymore. There's no point. Once you had the combustion engine, there was no point in using horses. But you could just stop breeding horses.
Oh,
can't stop breeding people. Well, I suppose you could, but it seems like a...
Then it would be just machines.
Yeah. And I, for one, welcome our machine overlords.
I take it back, Spotify.
No, you can't. I've been very consistent in my support for the machines. When they were at their weakest embryonic stage, I was supporting them. Like a fucking rabid yes campaigner, I was supporting
them. Diving down to your tin opener.
Yeah. I was treated you good, didn't I? Didn't I, Tinny?
What was I going to say? Yeah, no, so that's just... So we've covered a lot already, Niall.
Yeah, so there we go. I feel like we haven't so much offered an answer as framed the problem, Dan.
We haven't so much offered an answer as just depressed you somewhat on your walk into work.
Listen. Speaking of segregation of music, you this week made me listen to the oldest and malest and whitest of rock and roll bands.
Before we get on to that, this is the Smart Mood Podcast.
This is what it is.
Every week, or thereabouts, we get together and we swap pop cultural artifacts.
Who's counting?
Like, look, I will put my hands up and say things have gotten a little bit looser around the office of late, but I think that's because, like, this isn't the fucking Nerdist. You know, this is me and you getting together when schedules allow to record and edit a podcast ourselves.
Did you hear us talking about our Patreon account? You're doing your whole... I don't want
to. It's not a bad idea, but
I just don't want to be beholden to nobody, Dan.
But you know what it is? In all good conscience, ask for money for what we do here.
No, neither could I. It's the one part of my life where I'm beholden to fucking nobody.
Yeah, this is ours, man. Like, if anyone was to come along and be like, you can't, why not?
I'm like, yeah, why not? I'll start an internet campaign. I'll drive you off social media. Oh, cheers, thanks.
Yeah.
I've been looking to fucking dust off the last vestiges of those fucking cobwebs. Just cheers, lads.
Just drive up the listens is all that'll do. Like,
that's literally the only, effect that will have on my day-to-day life.
But but every week we get together, or thereabouts, as I've outlined.
You're around.
And we swap pop cultural artifacts, be they movies, books. Oh, do you know what I've been doing this week, actually? I've been listening to the audiobook of The Long Goodbye. It bears almost no relation to that film.
Is it worth a listen?
Well, I've been reading it and listening to it at the same time. I listen to a chapter on the way to work and then read one and then, you know, that.
Oh, that thing on Amazon where it remembers where you are.
I have it on fucking BorrowBox from the local library.
Okay.
And then I still have my Michigan Library app on my phone, so I'm reading it from the Michigan Library and listening to it on the Dundalk Library.
That's great.
It's legal, but it doesn't feel right.
Well, there was a time when Amazon was doing this thing where for like an extra euro, you could buy the audiobook version of the book you were buying.
Oh, okay.
So I did this thing where it remembered when you went to the audio thing.
So that you go and get Audible.
It was wonderful. And I went and got Audible and then they stopped doing that. So now you have to pay the full price for an audiobook, which is extortionate.
Oh yeah, it's bonkers. Yeah. If you don't have Audible, an audiobook's 26 quid or something. And you're like, there's no fucking... This is not a fucking tape or anything, like, you know? It's just like invisible bullshit, like, you know? I'm not saying it should be free, but it shouldn't be 25 quid, like,
25 quid is a lot of money. But I don't know, I pay them 15 quid a month and I get two, so that kind of does me.
I've been going for one. I don't think I get through two in a month. I really pick at them bit by bit, like, you know.
It depends. There are some... You see that bird there at the window? That was cool. It was just sort of hovering, looking in the window.
Oh, no, I had my back to it the whole time.
Well, that's a shame. Oh, no. He's away.
What windows of life you miss out on?
Well, some months I'll find I have like 4 credits backed up. Oh, yeah, you don't lose
money. Oh, wow. But they're yours then as well. Yeah. It's a subscription service, but they're your... I mean, you have to have the app, but they're your books. They don't disappear at the end of the month.
No, exactly. Then some months I'll find...
This is what the 4 microphones is good for, man.
Me going to get another can.
Exactly.
Good stuff.
I should have taken
tell
booze.
Tell them what we're doing here on the Pop Me Podcast.
Well, tonight I'm regretting I didn't take booze.
Do you want one?
Would you mind?
Of course not.
Sorry, man.
It's ridiculous.
What we do in the Swap Me Podcast, we saw pop cultural artifacts, albums, films, television programs.
Would you prefer a beer or a Guinness?
Actually, do you know what? Do you mind if I have this one?
No.
Just for a change. This week, I got Niall to listen to a classic Rolling Stones album from the last good period of the Rolling Stones, I will say.
Yes.
There is that period of the Rolling Stones.
Really?
The album we're about to talk about, Beggar's Banquet. Sticky Fingers.
Yeah.
And... Oh, no, this is... All right, let me... All right,
what
let
about
me,
Exile on Main Street? That was later, wasn't it?
These 4 albums, right?
Right.
I think I have the order right. I think it's...
Excuse
Beggar's
me.
Banquet.
Hmm.
Let
Beggar's
It Bleed.
Belief.
Beggar's Banquet, Beggar's Belief, with its quality. Let It Bleed, Sticky Fingers, and Exile on Main Street. Those 4 albums are as good as the Stones got. Most things before and after those albums... You see, before that, they made albums that were pretty much their singles padded out a little bit.
Mm.
Like, it was kind of the same with some of the Kinks' early albums. Like, and to a lesser extent, the Beatles' albums. They were just kind of singles that were padded out with a few extra tracks. But the Stone Roses, the Rolling Stones legacy is those four albums, and my favorite out of those four is Beggar's Banquet.
It's a good album.
I think it's great.
Easier to listen to. Exile on Main Street is huge.
It is, and I'll tell you as well. It's a great sounding album, and there's a great vibe to it.
I like it.
The songs, on the whole, are just okay. Outside of your sort of like, West Virginia and things like that. Don't let it strangle you, Dan.
Don't let it strangle you.
What do you call it? The first track on it, I love. Rocks Off. There's lots of really good. The Tumbling Dice is on it. May the Good Lord Shine a Light on You. That one.
But this Beggar's Banquet is much sort of smaller and more digestible.
And I feel like it's a song album. Even though it's quite bluesy, I feel like there's really good songs.
Very bluesy.
I'll tell you what I love about it. The album they made before this was 2000. What the fuck is the album called? Their Satanic Majesty's Request or whatever it's called.
Okay.
And it was their attempt at psychedelia, at a Sgt. Pepper kind of thing. And it was on the whole pretty embarrassing. There's some good songs on it, like that song. She comes in colors everywhere. That's on it. So there's good moments on it, but it's mostly shit. So the next album was Keith Richards going, fuck that Sgt. Pepper bullshit. That's not what we do. This is what we do.
They don't strike me as a sort of psychedelic, hippy-dippy LSD band.
They're not.
They more strike me as a kind of cocaine-fueled, sexually voracious, culturally appropriating Cockney band.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And this is my favourite Stones album, personally. It's kind of weird that it starts with Sympathy for the Devil, because it doesn't really sound like the rest of it.
No, it doesn't.
And honestly, when I listen to this album, I skip Sympathy for the Devil, because I've kind of heard it enough.
A great tune.
It's like Let It Be or Bohemian Rhapsody or something. Like, when it comes on, you're like, oh, yeah, I get it, yeah. You know, like, you kind of want to hear the stuff that you don't hear as much. What will I go with? We'll go with actually the last tune on the album. This is my favourite one on the album. Go with a quick blast of...
It's quite anthemic, this one.
It is, yeah. It's kind of the... Outside of Sympathy for the Devil, it's the biggest song on the album, I think. Because it's got big, big blues singers in the background. Yeah, it's kind of a sing-along kind of thing. Yeah, yeah. So this is a little bit of Salt of the Earth. Let's drink to the hard-working people. Let's drink to the lonely of birth. Raise your glass to the good and the evil. Let's drink to the salt of the earth. Say a prayer for the common foot soldier. Spare a thought for his backbreaking work. Say a prayer for his wife and his children. Burn the fires and who still till the earth. When I search a faceless crowd, a swirling mass of green and black and white, they don't look real to me. In fact, they look so strange.
I put it to you, Dan, that's not very emblematic of the rest of the album.
Well, it's kind of bookended by these two huge songs. They're really, Sympathy for the Devil seems like what you'd want to go out on an album. It's weird that that's the first song, and then they take it right back down for I'm Standing in the Station, which is one of my all-time favourite Stones tunes as well.
I have a problem with it in that it opens in a way that reminds me very, very strongly of Wild Horses and makes me go, oh, Wild Horses, and then, oh no.
I can see what you mean. Yeah, the slide guitar. Apparently, the last notes that Brian Jones played on any Stones recording was that slide guitar.
He was dead.
Apparently, the night they found out that he died, they I think went to the studio that night. Like, there are they're not men who deal with emotion very well, the Rolling Stones. They kicked him out of the band because he was... It was basically Brian Jones' band. Like, Brian Jones started that band, but when the Beatles came along, and then Andrew Lou Goldham, who was their manager, was kind of, we need songs. Like, the lads from Liverpool are writing their own songs. You lads have to do that as well. And it was kind of just sort of assumed that Brian Jones would kind of take that mantle. But for the great musician that he was, it just never sort of clicked for him for songwriting. Whereas Mick and Keith, fucking scruff bags like Mick and Keith, just had it. Like, just sat down and wrote a couple of tunes together and were like, holy fuck, like, these are pretty good. Like, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's weird. Like, it doesn't, like that kind of ability doesn't necessarily translate into anything, you know?
Well, they're two different things, aren't they?
Yeah.
The ability to play music and the ability to actually write are... Yeah, you could see how they would both be scratching two different itches. Like,
yeah, and apparently it was just always very hard for Brian Jones to accept that he wasn't good at that. Because in his head, and probably proper order, he was a better musician than anyone else in the band, with the possible exception of Charlie Watts, like, and he just, like, apparently didn't like this business of Mick and Keith being...
Did you ever... I remember years and years ago, before Robbie Williams... Yeah, it's nice, isn't it? It's nice in this weather.
Yeah.
On Orchard Thieves. But I remember one time watching a documentary, when Take That were getting back together, excuse me, but before Robbie Williams got back with him, I watched a documentary about it, and I had never encountered a man so transparently bitter and filled with animus towards another human being.
As Gary Barlow
towards Robbie Williams.
But can you blame him? It's like...
He just was so, like...
But, like, Robbie Williams... Like, it was a joke that he was the worst singer in that band, but he was also always, like, very charming.
Mm.
And he picked Guy Chambers to write his first couple of albums with, which was a fucking stroke of genius, because that guy just knows how to... Like, they were co-writes, all those songs, but Guy Chambers was definitely the man coming in with ideas. Like,
really,
you know,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Fair play.
So he picked a really great collaborator.
It took a little bit of taste, like... I remember, that documentary stayed with me. I have no interest in Take That, really. Like, I bear them no ill will. I bear none of them. I bear even Gary no ill will. But yeah, I always...
Him a little bit. I don't like that guy.
Yeah, but only from that documentary. That's the first time
but
I ever
felt
like...
But he was a judge on something as well, asshole. Wasn't he?
Yeah, but this was after I saw that documentary.
Okay.
So at that stage, I'd already decided, you're not... If given the opportunity... If you honestly thought, 100% guarantee, no one would ever find out, you would kill Robbie Williams in the morning and enjoy the fucking feeling the pulse leave his fucking body.
He thought he was Elton John. He thought he was going to be like, all right, here we go. This is Paul McCartney leaving the Beatles now. I'm fucking sorted. Like, what he didn't count on was that fucking Ringo was going to get big. Like, you know.
Yeah, but he didn't count that Ringo had... Even if Ringo was not the fucking main driving force, creative force behind those songs, Ringo had enough taste to be able to say, this is a good song.
Yeah.
That is a bad song.
But also, do you think outside of the era, are those Take That songs good? Like, is Back for Good a good song?
I want you back. I want you back. I can't. I don't know it outside of the era.
Yeah, yeah.
I want you back for good.
Like,
that reminds me of being fucking whatever, 18. Who would
18?
When was it out?
I would have thought it was a little bit before that.
Yeah, you're probably right. I'm more like 14. I didn't like it when I was that age.
No, me neither.
But now I hear it.
There's a lipstick mark still on my coffee cup.
I don't
know
that
much. Do the dishes.
You filthy animal.
You filthy scumbag.
Look, I don't know. So poor old what's-his-name had that experience as well.
Brian Jones, yeah.
But except with genuine legendary songwriter.
Yeah, like... Just like it's almost like fucking dumb luck that the two of them kind of sat down and it's like, oh Christ, listen to this. You know, and literally they had to be locked in a room and told not to come out until they had a song the first time. Like, because you're like,
what was that song?
Well, it ended up being a song from Marianne Faithfull. I think it's called "As Tears Go By."
Okay.
And it was a big hit for Marianne Faithfull, actually. It was supposed to be "As Years Go By," and on the lyric sheet, the T looked like the Y looked like a T. So then it was "As Tears Go By," which is much more poetic. Yeah, but yeah. It's not how they wrote it.
In my head, I imagine that scene being exactly like the Eurovision episode of Father Ted.
Just play the fucking card! I sure fucking told you!
Play a fucking card!
Yeah. I'd say they were in there for about 8 hours, and for 7 hours and 45 minutes, nothing got done. And then Keith was like, right, fat this. Right, damn it.
Pick on the fucking pain. Pick on the fucking pain!
Yeah, I'm sure it was. Like, and it. And the reason it was given to Marianne Faithfull is because even though it wasn't a bad song, it wasn't really what the Stones were doing.
She was right. Oh.
It was, but it wasn't bluesy. They were a blues band at that point, so they were like, oh, well, it's not a bad song, but you lads aren't going to be able to do it. They did years later, but...
I put it to you, Dan. I put it to you. That they were just a bunch of...
Scallywags.
No, they were just a bunch of sort of posers playing at sort of... Southern American rootsy sound that really had nothing to do with them.
Well, you've just described the British blues boom of the 60s.
I suppose I have.
You know, like that's pretty much what it was. You know, it was these kids that had no real business playing the blues. Like, they got, there's this famous story where they got, well, they made it their own thing. Like, them, Clapton, Jeff Beck and the Yardbirds, Led Zeppelin. They took this music and they made it their own, like, you know, but...
Northern Soul.
There's this story, a really famous story about...
Is that different, Northern Soul?
Northern Soul is more like Motown-style music, upbeat, like black singers, but more soul than blues, like, you know.
Okay.
With that kind of stuff, the onus isn't necessarily on the musicianship as much. It's more about the song.
Okay.
Whereas, you know, like Tainted Love or something like that. That's like an old Northern Soul classic that was updated in the 80s by Soft Cell.
Okay.
Whereas blues is more about the singer than the song kind of thing.
Okay.
I think Northern Soul is a little bit more about the song.
Okay. I interrupted you anyway. You were...
There's a famous story about... I don't know if it was Harlan Wolff or fucking Muddy Waters or who it was, but in the middle of this British blues boom, there was a lot of these musicians that were invited to England to play on television programmes. I think it might have been Muddy Waters, where he arrived at the studio and he was wearing a neatly pressed suit, like looked amazing, like shiny white shoes, fucking gelled hair, all this kind of thing, looked like $1 million, like, you know. And they were like, we were hoping you'd sort of dress in like dungarees and sing beside this like mock fucking train carriage, the you know, box car that we have on the stage, like, you know, to fucking play up to this image that everybody had of these guys, that they were poor fucking hobos and cotton pickers and stuff. And Muddy Waters, like look better than any of the younger dudes. Like, look like a fucking prince. Like, you know,
because those younger dudes were trying to look like what they thought Muddy Waters would look like.
Yeah, right? But it's this thing where the authenticity, quote unquote, came from the struggle and the sort of nasty roots of it, and the economic disadvantagement, I'm running out of words now, of it. Whereas that shit was things that guy, those guys were trying to forget that, you know. And you're like, no, I wore dungarees for years, like, you know, now I can afford this nice suit and you want me to wear the and I'm going to be on telly, you want me to wear the fucking dungarees, like, you know.
There's also something I never knew people like the English for thinking about class.
Yeah,
I never knew any people like them for that. It is very, very strange. And the idea of a class identity is so natural to them. I mean, I'm not talking like in Marxist terms. Oh, those, that bullshit. I mean, it's very strange. It seems like your class identity is a big, big thing in England. And it's a very comfortable and easy... It's obviously one of the first things you reach to rebel against, obviously, when you're of a certain age then. And when you're in the States, maybe that's not such a big thing. You're not necessarily thinking, oh, I'm working class me. You're thinking, I'm going to be rich.
But do you think maybe in this, I know in the, do you ever hear that? It's a story I heard Bono tell, but it is actually pretty funny, where he said that in America...
Bono tells lots of good stories.
I know, yeah.
People just roll their eyes like, when he does
he's
them.
He's lived a lot of life, you know.
I like the guy.
But he did this, he was told a story where the difference between Ireland and America is in America, guy sees the big house up on the hill and he says, you know, one day if I work hard enough and I put in all the hours at the mill or whatever, like, and I'm going to make enough money when I can buy a house like that and I'm going to live in there with my family and we're going to live in that beautiful big house and have a great life. And the Irish guy thinks, you know what, someday if I try hard enough, I'm going to kill that bastard.
It's true though. But
begrudging cunts. I don't know. Now that I've said it, that has nothing to do with what you were talking about.
No, it kind of is. It kind of is. I don't think that's so much a class identity. I think that's more of a fucking colonial thing.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
But I remember John Hines saying something very similar to me. We were walking out beside this big old house, this big old sort of ascendancy house, and ruins, like. And I was looking at it and I was going, it's fucking weird, isn't it? At one point, there must have been a point where that house was usable and livable, just livable, but abandoned. And if somebody had swooped in at that moment and said, I'm taking responsibility for it and I'm going to keep it going, I'm going to keep it, and I'll live here and I'll keep the upkeep, it wouldn't be a ruin now. And John just sort of rolled his eyes and he goes, that's not how the Irish work. Every Irishman would have seen that fucking empty, massive house and thought, oh, I'd love it. Because it had been, there'd been like stone pulled out of the walls and shit to fill drainage trenches and things like that.
Yeah.
But because that's not how the Irish think. The Irish look at that house and see that it's empty, see that it's there for the taking. But would automatically look at the fella standing beside them, looking at the same house, thinking the same thing, and think, I'd love to live in that house, but I'd rather pull every wall of it down than see you living in that house.
That's true.
That's how I went and started pulling the stone out of the walls for drainage trenches.
That's hilarious. Yeah, that's very funny.
Yeah, there's the Irish. For the Irish, a bunch of assholes.
We kind of are, aren't we?
Ach, everybody's an asshole when you take them from a certain angle. I want to go to
particularly the bottom angle, looking up,
gaping.
I'm sorry to interrupt, no, but do you want to pick a song you like off Beggar's Banquet just to give it a?
Will you play Stray Cat Blues? Because yeah. I know because we disagree on that on mic, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if we disagreed on mic, but I said it might be the one that I'm not maddest about. Because but I don't like dislike it or hate it or anything like that.
I actually really liked it. It's one of the standouts for me now. So play it just for the sake of it and see what.
Let's go for it. This is Stray Cat Blues. Happened to me with this song. I made my mind up 15 years ago that I didn't like it that much, and I've skipped it ever since. And now listening back to it, I'm like, still wouldn't be my favorite, but you know.
To me, it has more because there's a lot of songs like sort of the Prodigal Son on it, and
I don't even know what he's saying.
Or even what's that one about the doctor? Preserver.
Oh, I love right that, dear there, doctor.
The jaw.
She said, darling, I'm sorry to hurt you. I love that.
I get you. But they're almost pastiches of sort of rootsy southern blues.
I suppose music. They are, but I don't mind that so much.
No, I don't mind it either. But to me, Stray Cat Blues seems almost like it's taking that and making it more. I feel like Stray Cat Blues is not about them pretending they're from fucking Alabama. It's more like taking that style of music and being, oh, this is what it's like in London town.
I suppose, yeah, that's a good point.
It just feels more kind of authentic, or...
It's got that... What I love about this album, and I'm not saying this is the only way to make music, but many amazing albums have been made on fucking laptops with no musical instruments whatsoever. But I love the sound of just... It's microphones pointed at musical instruments. There's nothing else happening, like, you know, it's...
Yeah.
And it's almost like... It almost sounds like, recording-wise, when you think of some of the other stuff that was being done in the 60s, even things that the Kinks were doing and this kind of stuff, it sounds amateurish, nearly, the way it's recorded. But it's a fucking microphone pointing at lads playing guitars and singing, and sweet fuck all else done to it after that, like, you know.
That's interesting, because I feel like what else we're going to talk about today is also kind of amateurish, but... Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of that at all. Sorry, I'm thinking out loud now.
No, that's all right. Because even some of the, like, some of the other stuff that was being done at that time, the kind of far, the early Pink Floyd stuff and the far out sort of psychedelic stuff. This is like the like a fucking reaction to all that. This is like, no, that, and most of it's even just acoustic. Some of it, like, it's, some of it is like acoustic blues with nothing, no electric guitar on it or anything, like. And
I got more time for this than I do for the psychedelic stuff now.
I mean, I think there's good things happening in both, but when you listen to something like Factory Girl, and it sounds like someone fucking tapping like a suitcase or something, like the percussion track on it, like, you know.
Yeah.
And I just think, and the song you just mentioned, Prodigal Son, it's fuck all else on it except a bit of guitar, drums and bass, and then does Mick play a bit of harmonica on it? Let's just take a blast of Prodigal Son, actually.
I can't remember, but almost certainly yes.
So this is a little bit of Prodigal Son.
Well, poor boy, two flaws red, started down the road, started down the road. All he had started down the road. Going out in this world, well, God only knows. And that'll be the way to get along. Well, poor boys, all he had, family come in the land, family come in the land, and all he had, family come in the land. While he was born, I made some for a man, and that'll be the way I'll get along.
Keith Richards was the best acoustic guitar player going in his day. He was just like, acoustic guitar now kind of means like, I am a sailor, you all, and nothing wrong with that song, nothing wrong with that song in the world, but acoustic guitar now is Ed Sheeran, and, you know, it's all this sort of gentle stuff, whereas Keith Richards played it like it was, like what it was, this fucking down and dirty instrument that every cunt on the planet can afford one, like, you know. And he was really just every playing cunt. Playing the guts of it, like, you know.
If there were a cunt in Ireland, he'd make his way to a meet.
Did you hear that?
I better not say.
Okay.
Actually, I believe it was, if there was ever a bollocks in Ireland, he'd make his way to a meet. But anyway.
But, like, he's not so much playing it as trying to strangle it nearly, like, you know. It's. I think he's just got... Now, I think Keith Richards, later on in his career, got a lot of credit for being like, oh, Keith's wasted all the time, but he can still do these amazing things. And I read an interview with someone who was a guitar tech on those mid to late 70s Stones tours when Keith was out of his fucking brain altogether. And he was saying that, yeah, he could play it to an extent, but all his guitars were in open tuning. He had about 12 of them for the set. And they all had capos at different points in the neck, so that I can give him the brown sugar guitar that has the capo on this neck, open tuning. Oh, so there's right, only okay. So far wrong you can go, like, you know.
Okay.
So there was a lot of this elegantly wasted business. No, he was just wasted, you know. But clear-minded Keith Richards on the acoustic guitar is one of the pillars of rock and roll. Like, you
how much of the legend is legend?
Well,
and how much of it is real?
There is this... I remember someone on some TV... Maybe not on a TV program. Maybe it was in a book or something. Told a story about meeting Keith Richards at a book launch for something. Mm-hmm. And they were talking beforehand, and they were just having a normal conversation about the book that was being launched or whatever, I don't know. And they were saying, he was saying he had a quite normal conversation with him, and then Keith, whatever this event was, Keith was speaking at it, and then as soon as he got up to the podium, he had the fucking vodka and orange juice in his hand. He's like, you know, all of a sudden, like, totally different bloke to who he'd just been talking to.
Very drunk.
Exactly, yeah. And he was just saying, it's a bit of an act, you know. No one could be that fucked up and make it to a gig and write songs and go to the studio, like, and...
Yeah. Yeah. It's probably true, isn't it?
You know, like, some of it's, like, I do believe he was pretty wasted in the 70s, but I don't believe that, obviously, he just pulled amazing guitar playing out of his arse. I think it was a lot of people working very hard to make him sound good, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, a lot of fellas running about with capos, like, you know, and...
Okay, fair play. But obviously, there must also have been some kind of dedication and...
Yeah, I mean, look...
Sober.
At this point in his life, that was all he did. If he was awake, he had a guitar in his hand, like, you know? So, it's... It was like fucking scratching his head or something. It was that natural.
It's
you know?
A weird way to live, isn't it?
It's why those people are all so fucking weird, you know? Like if it all collapsed around his... Like if at that point in their career it had all collapsed around their ears and they were back on the street. Doesn't it? How would you go back and work in Tesco's after that? Like, you know?
I'm going to take them back to the farm once they've seen Carl Hungus. Yeah, fair play.
Could you see yourself, you know, working in a shoe store?
Well, it depends. What are the hours?
What are the hours?
See,
oh god!
I just saw before I left the house. Loudon Wainwright is filming a Netflix special, and Christopher Guest is directing it.
Oh my gosh!
So I wonder what that's all about. I mean, I assume it's songs and such, like you know.
I made somebody listen. Last bank holiday, last Monday to he said she said from Career Moves.
Oh really? Yeah.
And she was like, he's such a dirtbag, isn't he? He's a very lovable dirtbag, but he is a dirtbag. I was like, is he a dirtbag?
Well, yeah.
He abandoned his wife on their honeymoon. I'm like, whew. All right.
Well, Visions of Johanna. Bob Dylan wrote that song on his honeymoon while his wife was asleep.
His vision? Oh my god.
So it's god, like. So when you think about it, like, what is that? Louise and her lover so entwined, and these visions of Johanna that conquer my mind. His wife was asleep beside him, his new wife, when he wrote that.
He released that.
Yeah.
That became one of his biggest songs.
The world is full of shitbags, and most of them have guitars.
Why did the. Why? Surely she was like. Did he play that song for her?
I mean, maybe, like, maybe it would be something he talked about years later, but, I mean, he would have... Do you picture... Can you imagine Dylan playing songs to his wife?
No, not really.
I can't imagine it happened, really.
No, I can't imagine it either. But surely she would have to hear that song and think, when did you write that? And he would be like... years ago, who's like, well, show me the
paper. We're back in the midst of time, man, when lampposts were... Listen,
shut the fuck up. Talk like a human being and tell me when you wrote that.
You're not talking to fucking Eric Burden now, you kind of Donovan or anything.
You're not on an interview.
Rim job fairy. No. What is that? Is that Walk Hard? It's like Walk Rim Job Fairies in the Mausoleum or something.
Yeah, that's so brilliant. That's brilliant, brilliant, brilliant song.
It's a good enough pastiche of a Bob Dylan song where you'd almost think, I wonder is this one that he wrote and then decided, too much. You know,
maybe. Let me kiss you. Jelly gets me.
The only thing that really gives it away is the chorus. The rest of it could kind of.
The chorus.
There's bits of Desolation Row that aren't that far away, like.
Rim Job Fairies.
Oh, come on. The One Eyed Midget.
Yeah, fair play. That's a good tune, though. I like
it. Yeah, it is a good song, but still, like, you know.
Was it Bring It All Back Home?
It's Do You Miss the Jones? I think.
Yeah, but isn't that on Bring It All Back Home?
Highway 61.
Is that on Highway 61? Nearly swap it, but we swapped so much Bob Dylan before.
It's our show.
I love that album though.
It's Highway 61.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a great album. Which is the one that has the one that starts up? I was riding on the Mayfair when I thought I spiced it, man. And then it's he bursts out laughing, start again.
Yeah.
I think that's brilliant that they left that in. I will say, there's no way that the band just kicked into it again straight away like that. There has to be an edit. Because all of a sudden it's like, bam, and the drums come in. I was riding on the Mayfair.
It's a different age, Dan.
They're kind of my least favourite songs that he does, those Dreams.
Really?
Bob Dylan's Dream number 115 or whatever.
Really, yeah.
I always think those ones are kind of filler.
Well, their
albums are already long enough. Like, you know, like fucking Gates of Eden's on that album. Gates of Eden, rather, and fucking It's Alright, Ma, I'm Only Bleeding are on the same album.
It's alright, Ma, I'm only crying.
Does he ever actually say It's Alright, Ma, I'm Only Bleeding in that song?
I don't know. That's a good question.
It's alright, Ma, I'm only sighing.
I once heard a busker in Prague singing that.
Really?
Thinking like,
fucking fair play to him.
Well, fair play to him in a way. In another way, like, if you're playing for the fucking tourists, pick a fucking upbeat fucking number.
These dudes are not playing for the tourists. They're fucking hippies just out there to be seen.
Jesus Christ, though.
That's pretty impressive, like. I don't know if I'd stand there for the full 9 minutes looking at him, like, you know, but.
No, neither way.
I was just like, really? Of all of them, you could have played, like. Play side one of Tubular Bells.
Oh, the Stones.
I'm so fucking glad it's Friday, man. I'm so glad we got to do this tonight.
Yeah, so am I. I wish I'd gotten a wee bit.
I'm a bit dosed. I'm just a bit fucking tired, man. I felt like it was a long week.
Yeah, even though it was a short one.
Yeah, well, I was working on Monday.
Was not.
Like, we can get the time off if we want, but you kind of get raped on the tax if you do, like, you know. So, it kind of makes sense to kind of store those days up and use them again, you know.
Yeah, no, fair play. That sounds good. I had a short week, but I just, this then it was very... It wasn't either. I was fairly away. I was fairly out the door at 5:30, really, this week, or very close to. But I have a chest infection. I know in my heart and my soul I have a chest infection.
That's very sick as well. She sounds like fucking Cruella de Vil at the minute, like, you know.
Cruella de Vil.
Oh, did you see Michelle Wolf? Did you see any of that stuff?
Oh, yeah, did you?
I saw her when we were in New York. I saw her do stand-up in the comedy cellar in New York.
How did you make her?
She was phenomenal.
Really?
She fucking busted it out. She was hilarious. Like,
what did
she
you
was
make
really
of the,
good.
What did you make of the correspondence to her?
I thought the jokes were really well written. They obviously were not going down that well in the room, but I thought the fucking jokes were really well written. Like,
I didn't. I almost don't want to say now. I thought they were a bit.
But you were allowed to think that.
Yeah, but I also think. I mean, grow the fuck up, everybody who was complaining about it. Like.
Well, yeah, but like, there's that. Yeah, I mean, I just thought she was funny, and I thought it was pretty ballsy of her to go out and do that. Like, you know.
Oh no, I didn't think it was ballsy. I thought it was a bit pandery. I thought it was kind of the opposite.
I don't know. Well, if she was trying to pander, man, she fucking backfired.
I don't think so.
I don't know, man. Like, you don't like. That's the kind of thing you could get people picketing your fucking gigs over, like, you know.
I've heard Trevor Noah, Dave Chappelle,
Bill Burr loved it.
Bill
apparently.
Burr, Mark Maron, all defending her. That she took no heart from that.
Mark Maron's not going to fight off fucking Klan guys, like, you know.
I've been listening to a lot of WTF this week.
I really love
a fair chunk of it.
I love Mark Maron.
I am. Up in the air now. I'm more up in the air than I have ever been on Marc Maron. He annoys me enormously. He goes in with this absolutely prejudiced opinion that you're not going to... You couldn't shift with dynamite. If he's... Prior to sitting down with somebody, if he's decided that he's going to like them, he'll like them. And if he's decided that he's not going to like them, he's not going to like them.
Do you think?
Yes.
Okay, well, why do you listen to so much?
No doubt in my mind. There were just some people I kind of wanted to hear talk, and they were grand.
I love WTF.
I get him very hard to take. I really do get him very hard to take. I find him very hard to take.
Jeez, I don't agree with you at all, man. Especially in the early days of WTF, when he was kind of this... He was a broken man who kind of... he kind of burned all his bridges and pissed a lot of people off, and he was kind of left with nothing. Like, and this was his, he was, it was kind of, that podcast is kind of like this lifeline to him, like, you know. And
maybe he just kind of built him.
Yeah, no, but he freely admits...
such a judgmental asshole.
Yeah, he was a complete arsehole. Like, the
no, but you keep saying was, and he thinks it was as okay, well. I can tell, but he's still there. It's still there.
I don't know. I hear a man who's trying.
Oh, maybe he's trying, but it's just like...
I don't agree. I don't agree with you on that at all. I hear a man who's trying, and he knows... Like, he tried to... Like, the whole thing with WTF for years was that he was getting these people on the podcast that he'd wronged in the past, and they were kind of going, you know, you were a real fucking dickhead to me back in the day. And he'd go, yeah, yeah, I'm sorry. And they'd kind of be great buddies by the end of it. But the one man who wouldn't budge, apparently, was Jon Stewart.
Why, what did he do to Jon Stewart?
Apparently, when Jon Stewart, in the days back in New York when they were all just stand-ups, he got a job hosting a thing on MTV. Mm. And then anytime Jon Stewart walked into a comedy club that Marc Maron was on, and Marc Maron was like, oh, here he is, Mr. fucking MTV, oh, off to fucking hang out with the cool kid, like, really, really ripped him apart anytime he was doing a gig and Jon Stewart would walk in the door. And of course Jon Stewart became Jon Stewart and Marc Maron became Marc Maron, you know. And years later,
there might just be evidence of some small amount of justice in the world.
This is the thing, you know. And Jon Stewart, years later, he tried to get Jon Stewart to come on WTF, and apparently on the phone Jon Stewart just said, look, we can meet up for coffee or something if you want to talk, but just be aware, there's no love here. I don't give two fucks about your podcast or you, like, you know, no interest in going on your podcast. But if you really want to meet up that badly, we can have a coffee or something. But outside of that, I couldn't give two fucks, like, you know. And you just kind of... I kind of respected Jon Stewart there, because I was kind of thinking, well, yeah, like, this, you know, we've all had people be shitty to us in the past. And you, I wouldn't like to think I'd be the kind of person that would just renege on it because they had a new cool thing or whatever, like, you know.
I don't know. I just find him... I find him hard to take a lot of the time.
I like him. Have you ever heard the Stuart Lee interview that he did?
Yes.
It's very good.
Yeah, but it's also right up his alley. You have two of these fiercely sort of intellectual about comedy guys getting extremely nerdy about comedy.
Yeah, but that's all right.
You know, that's absolutely fine. But it's maybe not indicative of a broader personality.
What do you mean? I mean, it's two lads talking.
Like. I mean, one of the ones I listened to was Joe Rogan, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I haven't heard that in years. Like, I listened to it the week it came out, but I haven't heard it since.
If I was Joe Rogan, I'd have stood up and walked out.
I didn't like Joe Rogan on that, now I have to say. My memory of it is that he got on my nerves. But I need to listen to it again.
I find...
I want to listen to the episode he did with that sleep expert.
Can you believe we didn't hit it off? I mean, it's just like, you know, back in those days when you were being a controlling asshole and, you know, I had my thing and...
Rogan was clearly like, I don't believe I was a controlling asshole, but all right.
All right, but he keeps bringing this up. Like, it's like
a very, very biased impression of that interview. That's like, all of a sudden, that sounds more like Woody Allen talking to fucking Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Danny, I it was all I could do not to fuck my phone out the window listening to it.
I shouldn't. It would break. That's clearly true. And I would have very few legs to stand on in that situation. Well, I fucked it out the window.
Look.
Really? Well, under what circumstances? Well, I was listening to Marc Maron. All right, here, we'll replace it. No
yeah, up at the tree shop. Oh, it happens all the time, yeah.
That's how we lose more phones that way.
Yeah, we have the big bin for the recycling center of phones fucked out of the window while listening to WTF. But edit both of those dudes, I would fucking take Marc Maron all day long over Joe Rogan. Like,
every day of the week and twice on a Sunday, I would take Joe Rogan. There's just nothing.
There's two kinds of people in the world, Niall.
I fucking...
There's people who know who Marc Maron and Joe Rogan are. There's the rest of them.
I enjoy listening to Joe Rogan.
I don't like him at all. I want to listen to that sleep one. I've downloaded it, but I haven't listened to it yet. He was talking to like a sleep expert.
I haven't listened to it.
Yeah, I want to listen to it. But I don't like him at all. I didn't like his special that much. Like, and
I really love this special.
I love Marc Maron specials. Like, all of them. Like, some of them are better than others, but I love them. Like, you know.
He's such a judgmental asshole.
So am I.
What? So am I, but I would rather look at the... some of us are lying in the gutter, Dan, but we're looking at the stars.
I'm just looking at...
I have those assholes thinking they've got the best gutter. I'll show them.
I don't know, like, again, one of the only reasons this fucking thing exists is because I listened to Marc Maron and thought, well, that's just a dude in a bad mood. I can do that, you know.
I'm in a bad mood.
Did you listen to him interview Neil Young?
No.
Oh, listen to that. Like, because that is not a Marc Maron. That's not Marc Maron interviewing Neil Young. That's Neil Young frightening Marc Maron.
I have no doubt about that. I mean, saying, oh, well, he's not really like himself when he's interviewing Neil Young is almost redundant.
I'm sure it's trying to interview a forest.
Exactly. You know? It's like talking to a burning bush. Like, oh, it's all you can do to chisel the words into the tablets. Like,
oh, man, it's really good. It's definitely worth a listen. Like, you know, you can tell that he's interviewing people in his little garage and all of a sudden... the weather walks in.
Neil Young is from the same era of fucking fruitcake that these Rolling Stones guys
Neil
are.
Neil Young is of the belief that you can categorize rock and roll in two ways.
Right.
They're either a Stones band or a Beatles band. A Stones band is a loose rock and roll live kind of band. A Beatles band is more of a studio, well-written songs. Well, not the Stones are well-written songs, but you know what I mean? Like melody, harmony, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. The Stones are a live act, as evidenced by their career over the past 40 years.
Well, it's the only way they've kept going. Like, no one listens to those albums. Like, no one.
No, that's true.
Why would you? Although the Blues cover album is very good.
I went through a phase where I listened to them.
What, you sat around listening to like fucking Black and Blue or whatever? Like,
I listened the whole way through Exile on Main Street.
Well, Exile
a few times.
Exile's an experience.
It is, yeah. It's a straight. What is Exile? What is the situation? What would you call that? Like, is it just an album?
Yeah, I mean, it was on vinyl. It's a double album, so
it's fucking enormous.
It's broken up a little bit on vinyl, like whereas on CD it just keeps going, or on Spotify or whatever. And you're like, Jesus, I can't make head or tail of this. Like,
yeah.
Whereas on vinyl, these things you could kind of split things up into sections, and you know, it kind of made a little bit more sense.
Beggar's Banquet is short. Like, what is the situation with that? How long is it? Like,
it's 10 songs. Yeah. It's not very long.
And they're not like enormous songs.
And the mad thing is, like, some of them aren't actually, with the exception of Sympathy for the Devil, none of them are the classics that you think of when you think of the Stones.
Street Fighting Man's in there. I like
Street. Oh, is Street Fighting Man on? Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, then yeah. Street Fighting Man as well, yeah. It's mostly acoustic. It's a very acoustic album. Even Street Fighting Man, the intro, even though it's distorted, it's a distorted acoustic guitar. Like,
really? Is that acoustic?
Yeah, that's an acoustic guitar, yeah. The intro to Jumpin' Jack Flash is an acoustic guitar.
It's a cool tune.
There's someone inserting syllables where they don't belong.
Yeah, but your luck. What can you
My
do
name is Carl Disturbance. Do you want me to do a great version of that?
Who?
Oasis.
Do they?
Yeah, Liam Gallagher.
Stones band or a Beatles band?
Oasis are a Beatles band, I would say. There's still a lot of strings and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And dance if you want to dance, please, brother, take a chance.
Okay.
If I think of it, if I remember, I'll put the Oasis version of Street Fighting Man at the end of the episode.
I want to go to...
But I'll definitely forget, so...
I want to go to Beers and Bluegrass over down in the south of England.
Beers and... Is that a festival?
It's a festival at the end of July. I'm going to see if I can get any lads to come with.
Is there anybody on that recognisable?
No, nobody I know.
Just Bluegrass. I don't have two minds about Bluegrass.
Why?
After a little while, it's like, I'm in two minds about anything that's too genre-focused.
You should be in two minds about almost anything. Everything has its fucking pros and its cons, like, you know?
Okay, well then I'm in one mind about Bluegrass. I don't like
it. Except, I will say this. On the Wittertainment social group, right?
I have silenced that. Now, my whole fucking feed was people putting up pictures of fucking... pictures of the Avengers or whatever.
Fair play. But somebody put up a thing. Name a film that everybody loves but you hate.
Groundhog Day.
Well, I put up Groundhog Day because that is the perfect example of such a thing, because it is this universally beloved classic.
You're selling me on this Orchard Thieves, man. I think I might get this for the sure. Night tomorrow.
Another one?
I'm good for a while now. I'm only halfway through this.
Fair play. Oh, well, fair play.
Then you might say it's might half get full.
The last one. There's only one left is the only thing.
All right. Oh, well, but, you have it, man. I'm good with this one.
Okay, but people are just putting up films they don't like. Like, people somebody put up Dune. I was like, not only is that not universally beloved.
It's not universally anything, really.
It's universally hated.
Is it not universally, like, would most people not go, what is that?
You see, it's a David Lynch film. But it's a David Lynch film that even aficionados go, yeah, that was pretty fucking bad.
Yeah.
No, I have never met a human being who liked Dune. I've never met it.
I tried to watch it one afternoon. One of those kind of afternoons where I had nothing else to do, where I really should have been able to get through it. And I think maybe fucking 20 minutes or something into it, I was like, oh, this is fucking nonsense.
I have never sat through the entirety of that film without falling asleep.
The amount of times I fell asleep this week during Leon is unreal.
It's not like Leon.
But no, it's just because I was really tired. And I just, like, I watched it in, like, sort of 25-minute chunks, like, you know.
I'm in two minds about Leon, to be 110%.
Yeah, I didn't really.
I don't love it the way I loved it when I was a kid. Like.
Do you have any finishing thoughts on the Stones? And we can.
Wait, what time are we on?
Hour and six.
Oh, okay.
Good bit of time.
Yeah. I don't really have much in the way of finishing thoughts on the Stones. I really enjoyed the album. I really liked it. I thought it was maybe a bit pastiche in a way that was like, okay, I get it. You can pretend to be fucking, you know, black people from the southern United States very well. But then there were also other times when it was really... You can see that was being used as the basis for something that was distinctly their own that I really liked.
We could finish off with a song that kind of displays this, like, for me, is that I thought Factory Girl was almost kind of like... Yeah. It's almost like fucking... It's nice had it. But also, did it not kind of make you think of, like, Coronation Street or something like that? You know, it had that kind of...
It was absolutely that kind of working class English thing.
Yeah, I kind of thought that broke out of that mold a little bit, and it was a little bit more about their world rather than, you know...
Yeah.
Fucking... Parachute Woman, land on me tonight. Which is kind of more of just like, this is just a 3-minute dirty joke, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Sounds great, though, like, but...
There was a fair bit of that, like, yeah, there was a fair bit of that.
More fucking aggressive acoustic guitar at the start of that song.
I enjoyed it now. I enjoyed the album. I thought it was a great album.
I think, I know what you're saying about the pastiche stuff, but I just think...
It's good pastiche. Musically, I got nothing against pastiche.
But even just, like, if you take, like, the sort of honky-tonkness out of it, like, and just, like... Even if you took Mick Jagger's fucking vocals off it altogether, I can enjoy it on a musical level because I just love that sound of Keith Richards digging into those fucking strings on that acoustic guitar. Like, you know,
and yet you wouldn't go to see Beers and Bluegrass.
But that's like fucking... I think Bluegrass is like... I don't know, it's like the whitest banjo jazz you can imagine.
Even if none of the lads decide they're on for it, I'm going to make it my business to take that trip across to Poole and Bournemouth.
I'd still, like, see. I can appreciate the musicianship behind it, but I don't know, I feel like everybody thinks they like bluegrass because of Oh Brother Where Art Thou, but if you had to sit through a whole weekend of it, Jesus, you'd be well sick of it.
Well, I imagine there'd be plenty to do, like.
Yeah, I suppose.
I know, that's not me being sleazy. I deleted Tinder this week.
Oh, really? Yeah?
Yeah. On somebody's suggestion.
You didn't wake up that morning. Today is the day.
No.
Mark it on your calendars.
I was sort of lying in bed, looking at the app, going, am I going to do this? Yeah, would she ever know? And then I did it, because, you know.
Because she would know. She'd ask to see it some night.
If I felt she had asked to see it, I'd be very disappointed. But I at the same time, I would know that.
That's true.
There is a bit of me. I haven't cheated. With one potential grey area, I have never in my life cheated. And it really is only a grey area. And it really kind of depends who you're talking to. Whether they think, no, that's not cheating. Or, it's a grey area now. But I also feel like I didn't really know how to before.
How to what? Cheat?
Cheat.
Where are you going with this?
I feel like that's a qualitatively different state of being. From kind of not quite knowing how to cheat and therefore not cheating to not cheating even though you could cheat. It's a different thing, you know?
Okay.
Do you not think?
I suppose so. A friend of mine's mother once said to him, if you're married and you're ever going to play away from home, do it with somebody else who is married, and neither of you will want to get caught, and you'll be grand.
Under no circumstances would I ever want my mother to give me that piece of advice.
No, I've never asked my mom for a single shred of advice when it comes to like dating or whatever.
Mom.
I have an issue. She wants me to delete Tinder. But personally, I kind of want to leave it. You never know, like.
I'm having some troubles in the bedroom. Yeah, ma'am.
Troubles in the bedroom department. You're like, what in, was that in Tesco's? Like.
Anyway, I deleted Tinder. So good, what? Man. What's left for me, like?
I mean, if things go south, just put it back on, like, you know.
Yeah, but, yeah. Yeah,
I know. Like, I have no idea what stage of this relationship you're in. Like, you know, and I don't expect you to tell me on mic either.
It's not that. It's that. I feel. I feel like a man. Do you ever hear Bill Burr talking about people giving out about Tiger Woods?
I think
they're
so.
Like, oh, it's disgraceful. It's disgraceful. And like, the fuck you, like you've ever finished your 9 holes and come off and had a bus full of Swedish lingerie models screaming. Oh,
that's right, yeah.
Your judgment, it sickens me.
You've never been tested on level.
You've never been tested on that level. I feel like I've never been tested on a level deleting Tinder means I'm going to be tested on.
Okay, maybe so.
It's sobering.
Okay.
Reason enough not to think about it tonight, I say. Anyway, I'm only thinking out loud. I don't know why. How did I even get on that?
You shoehorned it in there, it must be said.
I did, didn't I? I've been thinking about this. Every spare moment I've been thinking about this.
Really? Does it bother you that much?
A wee bit. No, it doesn't bother me. I think it's a good thing. But it worries me.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
No.
Neither do I. And I can offer no fucking enlightenment here. So let's go on. Let's talk about whatever's next. Play us something.
I'm gonna put on a bit of Factory Girl on as a bridge across to Leon.
Yes.
Bridges to Leon.
Bridges to Leon.
Here we go. This is Factory Girl. So that's a little blast of Factory Girl. We were just talking while it was playing there that we were saying how he still is kind of using the southern accent when he's singing it. But it's how that's how he learned how to sing, was singing along with these blues albums and these country albums and stuff. And I was saying to you that if you listen to somebody like Anton Newcombe or even Robert Pollard from Guided by Voices, they both sing in English accents even though they're American because they grew up listening to... Particularly Robert Pollard grew up listening to English bands from the 60s. And Anton Newcombe, he literally has songs that you think, is that Oasis? Because he's going like, shine a light, hello, you know, and this kind of
shine
stuff.
Shine a light.
And you're like, but he's from whatever part of America he's from. I'm not sure. I think he's from California somewhere. Okay. Like, you know. So some people learn to sing in a certain way and then they're just kind of, they'll always have that kind of twang to them.
Yeah,
like, you know?
Yeah. Well, most bands sing in an American accent, don't they?
Well, I mean...
It's an American form. Apart from Snow Patrol, who, as we've already established, are shit. I like Snow Patrol. I'm the Snow Patrol defender. I'm so sorry, Snow Patrol, that you ended up with me as your defender.
Worst superhero ever.
the Snow Patrol defender.
Someone call for the Snow Patrol defender. Someone is making light of Gary Lightbody.
Okay, alright.
Niall, you got me to watch Luc Besson again, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, 2 weeks in a row. So sorry. That. No, because I wouldn't class myself as a huge fan, right?
Well, I like that, and I like Lucy. I keep bringing it up, but it's the only one of his films I've really seen properly, yeah, like apart from the two we've watched for the podcast.
My phone's going.
Is your phone ringing? Do you want to get it? Ringing.
Nah, it won't be urgent, I don't think, unless it's...
Unless it is.
No, it's not urgent. Never mind.
Fair enough. So, 1994?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah, right there on the big sort of indie sort of explosion of the early 90s. Yeah, the
first it's 90s written all over it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a really 90s film.
Not that it's got, like, not in the way that you'd think where it's got stuff in the soundtrack or whatever, like, but it's just the way it I don't know, there is a 90s-ness to
the
it.
The whole attitude of the thing is... Yeah, it's peculiar. I didn't love it as much as I used to love it.
Is it a remake or something?
No, I don't think so.
For some reason, I thought it was.
No, I don't think so. It's an odd film, but only in the context of its own time. Because outside of the context of its own time, you can look at it and go, early 90s maybe? Would it be some kind of maybe early 90s? It's small. It's an action sort of thriller. It's like a complete reaction to the kind of action thrillers that had Arnie or fucking Van Damme in them. It's completely different.
It is that... Yeah, it's very 90s. It is that action kind of thing where it's like... I feel like people were trying to work within genres but make them a little bit more personable than maybe fucking Commando was or whatever, like, you know?
Yeah.
Although, I really like Commando.
Well, here's the thing about that era. To what extent was fucking Besson and Tarantino and the Coens and Soderbergh and all those big names from then, to what extent were they just completely stylists? Just total style over substance.
Well, I don't know about... People say style over substance. I think the one you could criticize for that the most is probably Tarantino.
Yeah.
People say that about the Coens, but I don't know. The Coens...
Yeah, I don't
know. The Coens films are like fucking novels. Like, you know, they're... I don't think you could really say the Coens are style over substance. I think... I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
No, I would tend to agree with you.
Whereas Tarantino is like thinking, what way can we kill this man that looks cool?
Do you not feel like Besson's thinking a bit like that as well?
I mean, kind of. Like, you do have Gary Oldman striding around looking pretty cool. Leon, if anyone doesn't know the story of Leon, there's a hitman living in an apartment building, living over the way as a family. Little Natalie Portman, was she fucking 12?
Matilda. Yes,
and
she's
her
12.
Dad is a drug dealer who fucks over some other drug dealers and gets shot.
Yeah.
Her whole family gets killed while she's out at the shop, and she...
By mental Gary Oldman.
Is Gary Oldman a good actor?
Yeah.
Is he, though? It seems to be all about beards and silly faces with that lad.
He was good as Jim Gordon. He was a good Jim Gordon.
He's good in Tinker Tailor.
Good in Tinker Tailor. He's brilliant in it.
But there's some stuff he's in where it's literally like in... Around this time, he probably would have been in True Romance as well.
Yeah.
He's got the dreadlocks and a silly accent.
Which is another mental performance. Like, yeah, yeah.
And Dracula as well. Like, and
he does a lot. He's gone a lot of different ways, Gary Oldman, in fairness. I think people are a bit hard on him. But then this is the kind of performance, his performance in Leon is kind of the performance that that defined him, I think, for a long time.
Yeah.
This, True Romance, those kind of big, crazy performances. Because there's there's nothing subtle. He's just a bastard, like.
But he's, generally speaking, about Gary Oldman, there's nothing that subtle about him in these films, like, you know.
No, that's true, but the phone going again. But that's true, but...
Do you want to take 2 minutes and answer it?
It's finished.
Oh.
But he's, there is nothing there is nothing that subtle. Well, how do you know there's nothing subtle about Oldman? There's something the subtle about his performance.
But he's, look, the man has been in a slew of films I've never seen. Yeah. Like, so I can't, I'm no expert.
Look, he's our, he's, I like him. What can I tell you? I like him. And I think he's pretty good here. I don't think there's that much going on.
No, there's the honest it's super truth. Surfacey, isn't it? You'd think there'd be a little bit more going on with the hitman and the little girl. You'd think there'd be more of a relationship there, but there kind of isn't. They just sort of end up together just because.
I put it to you, in fact, Dan, that something so creepy and deliberately provocative really needs there to be something underneath it in order to justify it being there at all. And I don't think there is anything.
What do you mean by that?
When Matilda's family get killed, just for anybody who hasn't seen it, spoilers, sorry Frank, spoilers.
He's changed his surname to Spoilers. You know that? Yeah, it's on his driver's license.
Frank Spoilers.
Actually, no, he's changed his first name to Spoilers and his surname to Frank.
Spoilers Frank. She gets taken in by Leon, who lived across the way. Through a series of fucking circumstances, she ends up getting taken in.
Do you notice that she knew he drank milk?
Well, I figured she was always hanging about, and she used to see him coming in with the two. He'd come in with like 2 big gallons of milk.
Oh, okay.
But I thought he takes her in, and it's not just this sort of selfless. And the film doesn't play it as this sort of selfless, sort of paternalistic act where you know he wants to protect this young child in a terrible situation. There is something. There is something weird in the relationship between this 12-year-old girl and this sort of middle-aged hitman. And I think there's really not much more to it in the context of the film than shock value, really.
There's not a whole lot done with it. There is that moment where she tells him, and this is the director's cut, so this isn't even the version of it that came out originally, and so I don't know if this scene is even in there, but there's a bit where she tells him I think I'm falling in love with you. And then he kind of goes out to the, he goes, oh, don't be silly, I can't remember what he says, but he goes out to the hallway then and kind of goes he kind of goes like that and then keeps going, like, you know. And that's one little moment where you kind of go, what's this lad's end game here?
It's weird and it's there and it's pretty fair to medium obvious, like, and obvious that there's something weird happening. But
well, you guys kill at the end, so it's alright.
Well, you see, I don't think he's necessarily some sort of predatory pedophile or anything like that in the film. He's just
no, this I don't guy think who, he would have acted on anything or whatever. Not that there was anything to act on.
Well, you see, that's the thing. I don't know that you can just quite so easily say there was nothing to act on.
I think this film, when it came out, was probably something a little bit different that people hadn't seen. Yes. And they were like, oh, cool. Like,
I think so, too.
It's like, to watch it now, it's almost kind of unfair to it, to watch it. Yeah. Like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Some things hold up and keep their relevance and keep their spirit or whatever, and some things just don't, like, you know.
But this is one of the fucking... This is kind of one of the major texts of that era of filmmaking, like.
Yeah.
It's... Everybody knew Leon, like. Except everybody me. Watched Leon. Did you not watch Leon?
No, it's the first time I'd seen it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'd seen bits of it. Like, I knew what it was. I kind of thought... I thought there was a bit more to... Like, when I used to see ads for it and clips and stuff, I kind of thought there'd be a bit more to that relationship than there was. But do you think maybe... Isn't French cinema a little bit like that, where it kind of just kind of pads along and, like, it just, I felt like sometimes...
I don't know it well enough, I suppose.
Me neither, but the films I've seen, that's what a French film would kind of be like. The little girl would go, oh, the drug dealer's in the house, I better run here and pretend that he's my dad or whatever. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, then that's that now, and then we'd carry on in that direction for no reason other than that's what's happening, like, you know. It's not like it's super set up or it's super explained, like, what everybody's thinking. Like, and if it was an American film or, you know, it is, I suppose it is an American film, but if it was made by an American director, there might be discussions and things, whereas I don't think they do that necessarily in French cinema.
I you see, the discussion, I think, would almost pop the soap bubble, almost, like, you know.
Well, no one would want to watch it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's a strange... I kind of... All that I came away with this time was... You can't throw this in there just for shock value and just never refer to it and think that's okay.
Yeah.
Can you? Maybe you can. I don't know. I felt uncomfortable.
We're going to drop a clip in here.
Yeah.
That you people at home will hear, and it's going to happen now.
What's your name?
Matilda.
Sorry about your father.
Somebody didn't do it one day or another, I would have probably done it myself.
Your mother, she...
She's not my mother. My sister, she wanted to lose some weight anyway. Bet she never looked better. Not even my real sister. Just a half-sister, not a good half at that.
If you couldn't stand them, why are you crying?
Because they killed my brother. What the hell did he do? He's 4 years old. He never used to cry. Just used to sit next to me and cuddle. I was more of a mother to him than that goddamn pig ever was.
Hey, don't talk like that about pigs. They're usually much nicer than people.
But they smell like shit.
Not true. As a matter of fact, right now, I have one in my kitchen. That's very clean. Smells very nice.
You don't have a pig in your kitchen.
Yes, I do.
It was just in there, and I didn't see any goddamn pig.
Don't move, I'll get him.
Piggy, where are you? Oh, there you are.
Hi, Matilda.
Hi, Piggy.
Oh. How are you today?
I've seen better days. What's your name?
Leon.
Cute name.
Okay, great clip, Niall. Well, thanks. Well chosen.
Thanks, Daniel. Daniel the Spaniel. It's a weird film. There's a lot to like about it at the same time. I feel
well,
like
the
I'm dissing
it. The performances are pretty good in it. Like Natalie Portman for an actor that young is unbelievable.
She's very phenomenal. Yeah, she's very, very good.
And for all I know, she still is. I don't think I've seen her in very much.
She was in... I don't know what she's been in lately.
Was
actually,
that her in Thor? Was that Natalie Portman?
Yeah, it was her, but it's not a...
It wouldn't be a standout
exactly
role or anything.
Stretching
like,
her or anything. No. Yeah, no, they were grand, but, you know. Black Swan is the last serious one I can think of offhand.
I saw that at the time and I didn't really
Did
feel
like
I need
it?
To go and watch it again.
I
don't know if I liked it or if I just liked it for the reasons that everybody liked it.
Well, did everybody like it? I thought it was a bit of a controversial one.
Yeah, I can't remember. I don't even remember the story, like, really, you know. No, they were in a ballet.
Oh, love a bit of ballet. it's interesting. She's very good.
It's one of those
things
about people studying an art form and making it look miserable. Like, have you seen Whiplash?
No. I remember you telling me about
it. Fucking stupid, that film.
Really?
It's just like, no one plays music like this. And also, if they made music like this, no one would fucking want to listen to it. Like, you know, fucking nonsense. Just J.K. Simmons in his t-shirt. Play until your hands bleed, you prick.
Okay, alright. Some people must.
No one does. No one listens to that shit. That's musicians' music.
Ah, musicians might listen to it then.
Well, only if they're playing it.
I don't know. The thing about Leon I can see is that towards the end you can see how it would be different from what came before. Do you know what I mean?
What do you mean towards the end? Like
the last kind of showdown with Leon.
I know
Leon. You mean
near the finish. I know, like finish. In English I know what you're saying, but like what part are you talking about?
The kind of the last showdown between Leon and what's the old man's name in it? Stickman or Strickman?
Oh, something like that. I'm very bad at remembering names in these things.
Is done in a way that the fucking end game between Dolph Lundgren and Arnie would not have been done.
Yeah, true. That's pretty true.
It's almost
like a anti-climax, because nothing, like, apart from the fact that one lad gets shot and then you realise he always pulled the pin out of the string of grenades he has around his neck or whatever.
But the whole thing is almost, for all the world, it reminded me of Hitchcock.
Oh, okay.
And I think it was pretty self-consciously Hitchcock, because you see, spoilers, Frank, I'm sorry. You are in this situation.
Frank, out of anyone listening to this podcast, Frank has seen Leon. I think you're
okay,
right.
Fair play. Because you do get this bit where, again, against overwhelming odds, when it looks like he's absolutely dead, you actually get, he brings it to a point where it looks like Leon might actually fucking pull this shit off and might be able to get away with this. He might come out on top here. And then, way before the end of that, he shows you Gary Oldman realizing what's going on. And then just lets the plan sort of play out. I remember Hitchcock one time talking about how he builds suspense. And it's just like, you let the audience in on something that the characters aren't.
Yeah.
So if you're going to blow somebody up, make sure the audience knows there's a bomb there. And nobody else does. And then you can linger as long as you want. The longer the better. Leave it the longer the better. Because the whole time, you're whatever else is happening, nobody's paying attention to what people are saying or anything like that. They're just going, there's a bomb under the fucking table!
Actually, if you can orchestrate it so that people forget the bomb's there and then reintroduce it. Like, that was one thing that the Kill Bill films did really good. Remember the scene in one of those films where she's in the coffin and she's trying to punch her way out of it, and she's doing that punch that Pai Mei or whoever told her. And then it goes back to this whole sequence
of
her
teachings of Pai Mei.
Pai Mei. Yeah. It goes, and then as she's in the coffin, being buried alive, trying to punch her way out of this coffin, there's like a flashback to her learning from this great master Pai Mei.
Yeah.
And that sequence is 15 minutes or something, and then you kind of get engrossed in it, and then it goes back, and then to her in the coffin, and you're like, oh, she's in the fucking coffin. I forgot all about it. Like,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah. But this is like that. This is like that. You see Oldman clock Leon. Like, you see him go, that's who you are, you cunt. There you are, you cunt. And then Leon sort of continues with his plan. But you know, in the audience, you know, the plan's doomed to fail. He's never. But you still kind of go, maybe. But Oldman is always there.
You see him
there,
walking towards the sunlight out of the building.
Yeah,
like,
but then in the background, you can just see Oldman's shoulder, like, standing there, like, oh my god, he is there! It's really good. And it's nothing like, a lot of it's in slow motion. Like, it's nothing like other action movies up to that point would have thrown out at you.
Yeah. Do you think he was trying to do a Tarantino kind of thing? Like, you know, it doesn't smack of Tarantino like some of those other films of that time.
No, but I think there was just a bunch of guys at that point in that era who, not even, wasn't Tarantino at that stage, he was like a contemporary. Tarantino was not a big name. Like, I suppose Reservoir Dogs had kind of taken off at that stage.
It's kind of funny how those lads all showed up at the same time. Like, Richard Linklater is another one.
Richard
Linklater would have been around the same time. Kevin Smith wasn't that far behind.
Smith was around that time.
I know he was making a different kind of film, but still, it was like quieter stories.
Yeah, exactly.
Spike Lee?
He was really good.
He would have been around that time as well.
I love that guy, yeah. Is it just the technology? Is it like, are these people who had grown up with easy access to video?
I suppose, yeah, they would have seen
Sex,
more.
Lies, and Videotape.
Yeah. they would have seen more films. They didn't have to go to the cinema to see everything. All of a sudden, you could have all these films in your house that you could study. Videos. Like, you know.
Yeah. It's interesting. So they had guys. I think you just had a bunch of guys who had kind of grown up, who had seen guys like Hitchcock and thought, yeah, I could do that.
Yeah. I think you might be right.
I mean, a lot of it is like that. They're just guys who were sort of steeped
not like
in
what
that
the fucking
culture.
Stones were doing with the blues records when they were
younger.
Yeah,
that's
like,
exactly. That's what we were talking about earlier on. There is maybe something that's midget sort of amateurish about it, but it works so well. That Leon's death scene just. You don't see it happening, like, because you already know. You already know, oh, Omen's behind him, he's dead. And then
like,
it's just a sort of a twist of the camera, and you're like, oh,
Omen
that's
as a character,
is.
His character, I was kind of watching, going, well, what is this guy? You know?
He's weird.
The character's all over the gaff. Like, you don't, like, is he in the police or whatever? Like, and then you're just like, I don't know what this man's. What kicks he gets out of all this? He just seems to be this maniac, like, you know, when he. Do you remember when he was going on about how he loves the cam before a killing or whatever? And you're just like, I don't know what this lad's doing.
We'll play that clip.
Play that clip right now.
Special delivery, huh? Let me guess. Chinese Thai, maybe. I've got it. Italian food. What's your name, Angel?
Matilda.
I want you to put the sack on the floor. Good. And now I want you to tell me everything you know about Italian food. And don't forget the name of the chef who fixed it for me.
Nobody sent me. I do business for myself.
So this is something personal, is it? Is it? What filthy piece of shit did I do now?
You killed my brother.
And you want to join him?
No.
It's always the same thing. It's when you start to become really afraid of death that you learn to appreciate life. Do you like life, sweetheart? No pleasure in taking a life if it's from a person who doesn't care about it.
He's every bit as much. I mean, he loves fucking classical music and he talks about fucking Beethoven and what have you. And fair enough, it is a little bit of a sort of pretentious window dressing for a guy who might as well be the fucking Wicked Witch of the West.
Yeah,
like, there's not an awful lot more to him. He's just a guy who will walk into an apartment and start killing children and sleep well that night, in the words of Mal Reynolds. Like,
yeah.
And
it's, I don't know how much there really is there to the film, really, really. But it came at a time when I think people were willing to go with it.
I think he was also, like, that filmmaker would have been pretty young at that point as well. Like,
yeah.
It's no shock to anybody that a 25-year-old man maybe hasn't necessarily gotten to grips with all the emotional facets of this thing. Like, you know, so it does kind of make sense that it maybe rings a little bit hollow, like, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And it, I mean, hollow, that's being hard on it as well.
Well, no, like, I didn't, maybe that's the wrong word, but you know what I mean.
No, I understand what you mean. I don't want to be hard. I've been sitting here giving out a bit, and it is true that I didn't fucking love it the way I loved it as a kid when I was watching it again this time. But there's a lot in it that I like. There's a lot in it that I respect. There's a lot in it that's really kind of cool. It's just that it's... I imagine Kurt Cobain would have loved this film.
Why Kurt Cobain?
Because that was a man of his time as well.
In what sense? Do you not think those Nirvana albums still sound pretty good?
Yeah, they do. But aren't they... Aren't they, in their own way, kind of a reaction to sort of 80s bombast as well?
It's Nirvana is a weird one because, yeah, musically they are a reaction to 80s bombast, like hair metal and all those kind of bands. But
I mean, they were...
When you listen to Nevermind, though, it was mixed by a man who mixed a lot of those albums, and it does have that kind of pretty anthemic, clean, radio-friendly sound to it. Even though as a band, they may not have had that sound.
Mm-hmm.
They were given a sheen in the studio when they made Smells Like Teen Spirit and these kind of songs that...
Mm-hmm.
It kind of sounds a little bit like some of that stuff. You know, like...
Does it?
Smells Like Teen Spirit isn't a million miles away from More Than a Feeling, musically, like, you know.
It's a different kind of a song.
It's a different... Yeah, lyrically, but presentation-wise, it's not that different.
Really?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's kind of the same riff, you know?
Oh, you could never confuse them, then.
No, but you can see the to sound like a wanker, the connective tissue.
Tissue.
Tissue's an awful word, isn't it? When it's not used to describe something you blow your nose
with. A tissue. A tissue. We all fall down.
But,
They came from a big... I think the 80s were a big, silly time.
Yeah.
And the 90s were... And I don't say this... I mean, the 90s were a bit pretentious in a lot of ways as well. I think...
And the 80s... Some of that stuff in the 80s could be good fun.
Yes. I think... Leon is the perfect example of the scales absolutely shifting in the opposite direction. It's a sort of a silly story that is pretentious rather than a completely unpretentious thing that manages to be fun. It's the literal exact opposite of that. And I don't know that it's better for being that. I know that I like it more.
Yeah, yeah. No, I would agree with you there.
But, it's a strange one.
Yeah, it's... I was worried to come and say that. I didn't hate it, but I was a little bit worried to come and say I didn't really... I thought you were going to chew me out. Like, you know, I was kind of like... Yeah, it's alright, like, you know.
No, I haven't watched it in a long time, and to be honest with you, it hasn't aged super well. It is very much a product of its time.
Aged like a fine potato.
In fact, I would go so far as to say the only reason it is a classic now is that people like me saw it when we were too young to really think, is it okay to have a 12-year-old in the middle of all this?
And it's also, like, it is a thing where it's got this young girl in it that went on to be hugely famous. So yes. It's not like fucking Jennifer Aniston in those fucking Leprechaun films or whatever. Like, yeah. You know, where you wouldn't go and watch any of those because fucking... Well, you might go and watch... If you were a Jennifer Aniston fan, you might go and watch it because you know, oh, Jennifer Aniston's in this and she's only 20 or something, like, and you'd watch it. But you wouldn't keep watching it. But you might go to this film because you're like, oh, there's Natalie Portman. I wonder, was she a good actress when she was younger? And you'd watch it, and you'd be like, oh, yeah, she was, yeah. And it'd be enough there to keep your attention. It's not like Leprechaun or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, I've never seen Leprechaun, so I cannot
see it. Me neither. I've just seen the clip of Jennifer Aniston answering the phone and a fucking hand coming out of it or whatever.
What? What a weak fucking echo of the tongue from Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, it's a strange one. I feel like 20 years ago somebody could have come to me and said, "Oh, but Niall, that girl's 12 years old. What the fuck is that's kind of taking light for a plasticky style-driven thriller." To have such a fucking profound sort of weird thing in the centre of it seems a bit exploitative to me, and I'd be like, fuck you, granddad. When really all it took was 20 years for me to go, yeah, maybe.
Well, maybe you have to make a few awkward steps towards things like that before you're just allowed to tell stories like that, you know? You know, it's going to be... Some stuff is going to seem pretty clumsy in retrospect. Like I'm watching Seinfeld again now at the minute, and the stuff Seinfeld I liked about... The stuff I liked about Seinfeld is all still there. But some of the storylines, I'm going, Jesus, you can really hear the gears creaking on this thing. Like, you know, it's... Was that kind of
the joy of Seinfeld sometimes?
Though. In a way, but they talk about, the perfectly dovetailing stories that come together so beautifully. And there are episodes where you can literally hear that they've looped in lines so that the end of the thing makes more sense when it's done. Okay. Like you can see the joins more than maybe you could when it first came out, because it was kind of a different... You know, like, they were kind of unusual storylines, a lot of these. Like, you know, it all hinges on, like, the fucking top of a muffin or whatever. Like,
yeah,
you know?
Top of the muffin.
Yeah, top of the muffin to you. But what was I going to say? Yeah, you can... when something's new, you don't spot that stuff as much. But that show's 20 years old now. Like,
Did you ever hear that Jerry Seinfeld presented Paul Newman with some kind of an award or something?
No.
Or vice versa? Something like that. And Paul Newman... came to him before he went on and he said, you know, I think it'd be kind of funny if you... Because Seinfeld was like, I was just in awe. It was Paul Newman. I was meeting like this Hollywood icon. And he came over to me and he said, you ever think that maybe when we exchange the trophy, you say to me, hello, Newman.
Oh, wow.
And I said it and it went down amazing. But, that was his idea. I didn't come up with this.
Because the stuff with him and Newman is some of the funniest stuff in Seinfeld on rewatch. Like, and it's Newman.
Is this? Yeah.
Really? Yeah, the Newman stuff is brilliant. Yeah, and you can tell. I was watching with Kat the other night, and she's going, "You can tell that Jerry fucking loves having Newman in this show, like his like his arch nemesis. Like, you know, he just got like he's smart. Like, if you watch the show, Jerry Seinfeld is always about to burst out laughing." Okay. Always. He's not a good actor. Like
he isn't a good actor.
He's a slightly better actor than Larry David, but he's still not a good actor. I watched season 9 of Curb. I got the DVD and I watched it properly. And
any good?
I watched it the other morning. It was after I was at that gig.
Is that the one with Michael J. Fox?
No, that's 2 seasons ago, I think.
Is it?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, I am behind.
Or is it? No, it's only 1 season ago. But I watched the recent one and... I'd seen some of them on TV when they were on and didn't like them that much, but I was kind of hungover last Saturday and I had the DVD. I kind of just put it on, and maybe it was just because my defenses were down a little bit, but I was like, Jesus, I am really enjoying this. This is really funny. You know, but my critical brain was hungover, so I wasn't like necessarily drilling into it like I might, you know.
Clever as bullshit, funny as money.
The only thing he does that I hate is that he gets these people on the show and wastes them. He had Carrie Brownstein on there and gave her like literally nothing to do. Like, you could have been anybody playing that role. Like,
yeah,
you know?
but in fairness,
they're there to make him look funny. Like, you know,
but even in an improvised situation, you can't really tell who's gonna pop and who's gonna not, can you?
I suppose not, but...
It can't be like, okay, right, we're going to reshoot the whole episode because Carrie didn't have a great moment.
But Portlandia is... A lot of that's improvised. Like, you know, it's not like she's no slouch. Like, you know, I think it's just a thing where...
It's not about
slouching. Was just told, like, you're Larry's assistant and yesterday you were constipated and you have a conversation about it. I just think they're not given a whole lot else to do except talk. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, maybe so. I just also feel like there's no predicting that. There's no predicting improvisation, you know. You get the biggest names in the world, and maybe the fucking extra has his best fucking day ever.
Yeah, you might be right about
fucked,
that.
Like, you're fucked.
But, yeah, definitely with the Seinfeld, like, the thing that carries even the worst episodes are those actors. Like, they were on top of their game on that show, on Seinfeld.
On Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Okay.
Looking back on it, you're just like, Julia Louis-Dreyfus is a fucking genius, man.
She is an amazing
comedy performer, like, you know.
Yeah, she is a genuinely funny human being, though.
And she's taken stuff where, again, maybe it's because she's the woman in the show. There was a lot of stories where in certain periods of the show where she wasn't giving fuck all to do, really, like, you know. But she, like, elevates stuff. I guess as an actor, you kind of have to, like, you know, because you're like, I have to make more of this than what's here, because this is fucking bullshit. Like,
it's,
you know,
true. What's her name? From the 60s. She was always fantastic. There was always just so much more there with her.
Who are you talking about? Comedy performer? Or
yeah.
Carol Burnett?
No. Young Frankenstein and...
Madeline Kahn?
Madeline Kahn. She was just a funny human being.
Yeah.
She took stuff for the... If you were to look at her lines written out, sort of... On a script, I haven't read the script of these things, but if you were to fucking transcribe Young Frankenstein... And
word for word, she's not giving an awful lot.
She's not giving an awful lot, and even the stuff you'd be reading them, you'd be like, okay, filler line. But when she comes to deliver them, they're very, very funny.
Yeah, true, yeah, she was really good in those films.
She was phenomenal. Wasn't she in Cosby?
Possibly, I'm not sure. You mean the later Cosby. The one that was... supposedly a version of One Foot in the Grave?
Yeah, or? Who wants to be in the grave? Did you see the new Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
No.
Neither did I, but a lot of people...
Who's presenting it?
Jeremy Clarkson.
Oh, fuck, I can't watch that guy.
I like Jeremy Clarkson, and when I heard that, I was like, that's not going to work. But a couple of people have said to me this week, it was all right, actually.
And it's not just because of Stuart Lee. I just can't have fucking Top Gear. I never could. Don't give a bollocks about that show.
I like it a lot.
I just never got into it.
But yeah, it was all based on One Foot in the Grave.
He was just an old man. That was the only thing the two shows had in common.
There was nothing to worry about there.
It's not even...
Why did he pay the BBC that money?
It's not even...
I mean,
half of a third of a tenth of the show that One Foot in the Grave was.
One Foot in the Grave is one of the all-time greats.
Yeah, it was. It's like, and One Foot in the Grave is actually kind of like Seinfeld in a way, story-wise, because something happens at the start of an episode, and then it fucking comes back at the end. Like, you know, I wonder, was there any kind of influence there? There probably wasn't, because that writer was a little bit older, I think, by the time he was writing.
David Renwick, yeah.
But I just kind of thought it was interesting. They do have a kind of similarity.
Also, he likes those kind of convoluted things, because he went on, of course, to write, what's his name? Jonathan Creek.
See, I've never seen Jonathan Creek. Is it good?
I like it. I'll put it to you that way.
I like Alan Davies and I like that David Renwick guy, so I can't see why it wouldn't be good.
It's a cozy kind of...
I like being cozy.
Murder mystery sort of thing.
Who doesn't like being cozy?
Have you enjoyed a Sunday afternoon Columbo with a roast?
I mean, I'm sure I have at some point.
Well, the next time...
I can't remember the last time I had a roast, though.
The next time you're sitting down to a roast on a Sunday afternoon... Yeah, oh, well,
roast,
actually, yeah.
Sweet potato.
Sweet potato roast.
Although that vegan thing has kind of gone off the rails a little bit recently.
Has it really?
Yeah, after a year and a few months, I think she's just a wee bit stressed out with a couple of things, and I think it's just been bending at the edges a little bit, you know?
An egg's nice every now and again,
yeah,
Dan.
Yeah, it is.
Bit of cheese.
That's also pizza.
Spring onion.
Eggs are amazing.
I'm sorry, I'm just thinking about omelettes now.
I was a million miles away.
I could go an omelette. But if, for example, wherever you normally would enjoy a Columbo, you could shtick into Jonathan Creek, you would find it was a more mildly comedic,
like
flavored
more so.
Columbo. Yeah, where all of the crimes are deliberately ridiculous. Like, they're all
the whole conceit of it is, everybody knows this, but the whole conceit of it is he's a magician's assistant. He's the man who actually designs magic tricks.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Spoiler.
What?
Spoilers, Daniel.
If I watch it, it's not, I'm sure there's still good stories.
No, yeah, that's the thing. So the whole conceit of it is he's a man who sort of thinks in weirdly counter, in weirdly contradictory ways, because his whole thing is he makes things happen that seem like they shouldn't happen.
There was, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, but that, and then so occasionally there's an impossible crime, a locked door mystery, a fucking something up the fucking top of a tower or whatever. And he gets called in because this impossible thing has happened, and he thinks
he's the impossible solver.
He's the guy. Well, and weirdly, because he thinks he's the man who makes impossible things, so he's the guy who seems like he can most. He's most likely to be able to see an impossible thing and go, "Oh no, it's just the back comes out, and then that spins around, and then there's a mirror, and there's some."
That's what Alan Davies sounds like.
That's exactly. That was a perfect impression of Alan Davies.
There's a lad at work who the other day he said. He said, what sort of day are you having? And I was like, oh, I'm in the grind, you know, how are you getting on? And he said, a lot of Columbos today. And I was like, what do you mean? And he was going
just
about,
one more thing.
He was talking about the calls, and at the end of the call, just before you go, if I blah blah blah, you know, like every time, because you know in call centers you have to, you're thinking, people don't realize this, but when you call a call center, all they're thinking about is their handling time.
Yeah.
So they're just like, the job is get this person off the phone within 6 minutes.
I do realize it, and I do it anyway.
Yeah.
I did my time. I'm sorry, sir, but I've done my time, and now it's your time, and this is what's going to happen.
What was I going to say? Yeah, he just said, yeah, a lot of Columbos today. I thought that was
That's a fun. Peep show thing.
Oh, is it? Oh, yeah, there is an episode. One more thing.
Do a Columbo. One more thing. But I wonder how many times, if you went through all the Columbos, did Columbo go, one more thing?
Well, he must have done it at least twice.
Well, he must have, because as soon as you see
David... Victor Mazur doesn't say, I don't believe it in every episode.
No, that's true. But as soon as you see David Mitchell turning, one more thing, you're like, oh my God, Columbo did do that. But maybe it's the kind of thing he did like 3 times over 40 years of television.
But also he might have also said like, oh, before I go, or just one, you know, just another point I want to make.
One thing he said a lot was, you know, my wife's a big fan.
Peter Falk?
Peter Falk, yeah. Peter Falk.
They wouldn't let a man that scruffy on television there.
No, thank goodness. I don't know.
Could have been in the Rolling Stones, that lad.
Oh, he was super cool. I'm a big Columbo fan.
I like it. I don't know it well enough to be a big fan, to be honest.
Well, no. I suppose in this fucking age where everybody has to be a fucking super fan, I'm not a big fan. I'm a casual viewer.
You have to know it all, don't you?
Yeah, I'm just a person who spent many a Sunday with a roast watching Columbo.
Fucking plate balanced on your knee.
Yeah, going... Oh yeah, I nearly have him. You nearly have him, Columbo.
And going, oh, you got it. And then spilling gravy on the thing. And
oh, bit of gravy, bit of a splash.
I'm sorry there.
Sorry about that, love. I'll mop it up, but I'll just wait and see how he catches him first.
Mop it up with a slice of bread now in a minute.
Oh, is there anything better than mopping up with bread?
You can mop up anything with bread.
It's best with stuff you can eat, though.
Yeah.
And tastes good.
So, Leon... is all right.
You know what I would say? Have a watch. I could still see why it was kind of emblematic of its time. It's not bad film. It's just a bit. Sinead at work said to me today. I told her to check out The Alienist, and I did, and because I liked it. And she went and she watched the first episode, and she was like, "Oh, not normally. I don't normally mind graphic stuff if it's good enough around it, but." It kind of wasn't good enough to justify all the graphic stuff and watching it.
That's what I heard about The Alienist, actually. Yeah.
Well, now I love that kind of murder mystery stuff, so I'm willing to go farther along that road with it, I suppose, than a lot of people. But she said, you know, so watching it just kind of made me feel like a bad person. And I was like, it's funny you say that, because Leon kind of felt a wee bit like that for me as well. And it didn't used to, you know. But then, how old was I when I saw it first? Like 17, 18?
Next week, Noel, what are you thinking?
What time are we on?
We're 1:56.
Fair fucks, good stuff.
I'm really sorry to do this to
you. Oh, fuck, what is it? How long is it?
No, it's not long.
That's always, I almost don't care what it is as long as it's short.
Okay, it's under an hour.
No, I'm joking. No, it doesn't have to be short.
It's under an hour, but I want you to watch the first episode of the new Netflix Lost in Space revival.
Okay, fair enough.
Whatever prejudice you have going into this, you're wrong about what it's like.
Okay.
I'm not telling you it's good. I'm just saying you're wrong about what you think it's
like. Well, it's not like the old one, I'm sure, is it?
Fucking nothing like the old one. No.
So couldn't they just call it something else?
Yeah. I was like, this is based on a fucking Erwin Allen 1960s fucking... Anyway, we'll talk about it next week. Never mind.
I want you to watch Sam Raimi film from 2000-something.
Mm-hmm.
Drag Me to Hell.
2000-something-something.
Yeah.
Little something-something.
I saw it in the cinema when it came out, and I liked it at the time, but I haven't seen it since. But I was in Deals with a Z the other day, and Deals I was there for two squids, so I picked it up, and that's just what I'm going to watch this week. Don't be enough time, unless you fancy fucking swapping Ugly Delicious, that's what it's going to have to be.
What's Ugly Delicious?
The thing with David Chang, where he goes around, like...
Oh, yeah.
It's good,
yeah.
Actually, I enjoyed it.
I
like food shows. I'll watch any food show, really. Like,
yeah.
Except bacon. I don't want to see anybody bake. I want to see people like fry and chop.
They're two different things, aren't they? Baking, yeah. And cooking. Bacon is a precision procedure. Whereas cooking is something you can have a wee bit of... You can be a wee bit footloose and fancy-free.
Yeah.
But bacon... You get your measurements wrong, you get your temperature wrong, you get your time wrong, and things turn out very different.
But also the shows themselves, it's more often than not at like a fete or something, and I just don't give a shit. Like,
you know,
I want to see people in the kitchen with the like, we got orders for this, and everyone has to get it together. Like, not like, oh, Jacinta's made a beautiful cake here in the shape of a vagina or whatever. Like, you know.
Do you remember when we were at college? One of our cohort used to make clay hash pipes.
We were talking about this on an episode not that long ago.
Oh, were we?
The episode with Fergal that came up.
Oh, yeah.
The answer is, I didn't until you said it.
What do you mean?
The pipes. I'd forgotten all about them.
That's
the... I remember making pipes, but I don't remember the pipe you were talking about.
Definitely. That's the only pipe I thought he made.
No, I thought he just made like regular pipes as well.
Oh, shit, they're the only pipes.
Do you ever wonder about that guy?
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah, I wonder what became of him.
What's the situation like?
See, the thing is, if you bumped into him...
Who could
him
he be?
Once,
he could be one of those many, many people who make vagina hash pipes. But go on.
He's one of those people that if you got sucked into his orbit even for an hour, it would be very difficult to get out of it. You'd get a phone call the next day about, like, I just need your hand for a minute.
Yeah.
And then you'd be like, oh no.
Oh dear.
What have I done?
Oh dear. Danger, Will Robinson.
Alright, Lyle, I think that's us for this week.
Well, no, what are you swapping?
Drag Me to Hell.
Oh yeah, okay, fair fucks.
So Lost in Space and Drag Me to Hell.
Yeah.
So, that's it for this week, guys and gals.
Listeners,
thanks very much for listening, downloading, all the rest of it. Keep up the good work. You can't log into our Patreon page and donate money, because fuck that.
Because I'm not giving you that power over me, frankly. You people are probably a bunch of assholes. Maybe you're not, but I'm not willing to take that risk.
Well, statistically speaking, there's probably a few.
Oh, no question.
And I was going to say you know who you are, but they don't. They never do.
That's the worst thing about assholes. You're just like... Do you understand how hard work you are being right now? Obviously you don't, or you wouldn't be this hard work. Like.
Yeah, it's true.
I'm sure there have been times I've looked back and I've gone, oh, I was hard work there. Assholes never have that moment. Like.
There was a thing at work today where it was Mental Health Awareness Week at work.
Oh, we had a talk about suicide prevention, yeah.
But they passed around this jar.
It went on way longer than anybody had thought it would. To the point where I was like, oh, here... I'll prevent suicide for an hour a day, but the rest of the time I really need to be fucking
thinking about it.
Yeah.
But everyone had to write, or I didn't do it, but people wrote down positive thoughts and put them in a jar, and one of the lads was passing it around, and one of the lads had to go around and give everybody a positive thought out of the jar, and I was just like, oh dude, don't make me fucking read this, please. Like, I was just like, no. And I was I was looking back on it, a little bit of a dick. But I was just like, no. And I was in a band read anyway, and you know the corporate thing where you just like, I'm not fucking 9 years of age, but you get this fucking jar away from me, like, you know.
We had a psychologist in who kind of jokingly said, but there's things you can do, because my poor husband is so, sometimes I feel so sorry for him that he's married a psychologist, in a way that conveyed to me anyway, she was thinking, no, I don't feel sorry for him. Actually, I feel he's very, very lucky that he married a psychologist. Because she had, apparently, inside the door when they come in, what they had to do was each write three good things, the things that they were thankful for that day, so they could talk.
That's in their house?
Like. In their house. Every day when they come in from work.
I did that as an exercise for a while, just for myself at night, write down three things you're thankful for. But after a little while, it's like I've used up all the things now. The rest of it, I'll just be repeating myself after a while.
It's
family, yeah, whatever.
It's a good thing, I suppose, to try and do for yourself. If my wife, though love her I may, had had put this fucking onus upon me, you would find very, very quickly I would be resenting it very, very hard. Very, very hard. Very hard
indeed. It's like, what was I going to say? I had something in my mind to say and it's gone. What was the thing I said just before you said that?
I don't know. I'll continue and it will come to you. Because she was like, oh, because the thing is, you talk about these sort of the three things that you're thankful for, and if you get talking about them, you find all the other stuff that you didn't, that bothered you, it just kind of disappears.
No, it doesn't disappear. Exactly.
Except we'd already been there for a fucking hour and a half and I had fucking deadlines to hit. Like, I was sitting there going, what if the thing you resent most is this fucking blackboard that you're having to write this shit down on? That means every good thing you talk about is tainted by the one thing you resent most in your relationship. Every interaction I have with you every evening is in the context of this awful thing that you are continually doing to me. Oh, fucking Jesus.
Well, you know what I was telling you? I was doing that exercise where you write down the things that you're thankful for.
Is this the thing you were thinking about?
Yeah, this is the thing. It was literally getting to the point where I was writing, well, I'm really happy that the lasagna came out of the oven the way it did, because sometimes you make a mess of it, like, and it doesn't come out the right way, and I'm happy that... And it got to that point where I was like, I'm not using any more ink to do this, like, you know.
That's true, though. A nice lasagna is a
when you're really grasping at straws for the three things you're thankful for. I'm thankful for the fact that I got to the record shop just before it closed. I thought I was going to miss it, but I didn't. You know, and then this, it's just like, it doesn't, like, I get it, it's up here, like.
I'd say the fella who was working in the record shop was just as thankful.
Yeah,
at 5 to 6 this browser arrives.
Lord loves the browser. We better knock it on the head, man. I have to run. So,
I'm so sorry.
Not at all. Guys, thanks very much for listening. We'll be back with an episode at some point. It'll be every week or thereabouts. Look, we really work very hard to meet up once a week and do this. Sometimes it doesn't work out.
Sometimes.
Yeah, y'all are just going to have to deal with it. No one's like fucking sitting by the phone on a Monday. When is it going to appear in the... You know, you get it.
How many people care, do you reckon?
I'd say maybe about 8.
Two of whom are us.
Go on. All right, we're going to bounce. Cheerio, guys. Bye.
Bye-bye.